Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Thanks for tuning in. Yes, we are video streaming tonight, so if you want to have the thrill of watching me sit here, just go to MikeMalloy.com and click on Malloy Vision. Been a lot of focus on this disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, and we're going to pay that little bit of attention again tonight. But there was something else that I had no idea occurred last night. Maybe you knew about this. But late last night, according to Zach Carter at the Campaign for America's Future, late last night, the U.S. Senate rejected the single most important element of Wall Street reform by a vote of 33 yes, 61 no. It was the SAFE, S-A-F-E, Safe Banking Act. And it would have forced the breakup of the nation's six largest banks and dramatically reduced the political clout of America's financial elite. Now, the 61 votes against the measure, in other words, are votes in favor of Wall Street's stranglehold on our economy. Anyone doubt that we live in a corporatist society? Oh, my God. No matter what else is ultimately enacted in the name of Wall Street reform, Congress has decided with that vote last night that it will not confront the single greatest problem in the U.S. economy, and that is these financial institutions that are too big to fail. Now, on Wednesday, the day before, the Senate also voted down a $50 billion Wall Street tax that would have been used to fund the cost of shutting down major failing banks. By rejecting both the breakup bill and the bank tax, the Senate has dropped back 10 yards and punted where it concerns the too big to fail problem. I mean, I had no idea this happened. This is really, I mean, it's a terrible, terrible situation. Anyway, as Zach Carter writes, for now, it appears that Wall Street, the catch-all term for this filthy, predatory, capitalistic banking industry, Wall Street has emerged from the great financial crash of 2008 with even greater political might than it had during the reign of George W. Bush. Apparently, both Democrats and Republicans in the House and the Senate have decided they can only get so tough with corporate America. Corporate America wins. I don't know why we continue to pretend like we live in a representative democracy. I really don't. I guess it's the same reason we all continue to watch Super Bowls. You know, I couldn't care less about professional football. It's a place where young men go to get brain damaged and wind up with Parkinson's disease or be paralyzed or whatever. But I do watch the Super Bowl. I don't know why I watch the Super Bowl. I just do. I guess it's the same reason that I vote. I know damn good and well that when I go in and vote for the Democratic candidate in whatever race I'm voting in, that it really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. But I guess what I'm looking for is to see, you know, the television coverage, the excitement, like at the Super Bowl, the excitement. Ooh, did the Democrats win? Oh, I hope the Republicans didn't win. Ooh, are the Democrats winning? I wonder how much longer we're going to keep kidding ourselves about this, right? Last night, 27 Democrats, and 27 Democrats and all but three Republicans who were voting, voted against breaking up the banks. Now, Barack Obama, had he been able to vote, he would have voted the same way. He's opposed to both the tax and the breakup measure. Not only that, did you know this? Monday night, there was a dinner at the White House where Barack Obama hosted The CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, Jamie Dimon. I just about give up. J.P. Morgan is the largest U.S. bank and spent more money on lobbying in 2009 than any other bank. House Minority Leader John Boehner has tried and tried to get Jamie Dimon to give him campaign funds. Meanwhile, Dimon is being wined and dined in the White House by Barack Obama. So, as Zach Carter points out, there is literally no economic evidence at all that these megabanks do anything to help the economy that can't be accomplished with smaller institutions. And by contrast, centuries of research has shown that giant banks are destructive. The sainted Adam Smith was warning against the dangers of megabanks back in the 18th century. 18th century, folks. There are plenty of good economic reasons to cut our financial behemoths down to size and no good reasons not to. But the Senate last night voted 31, or was it, 33 to 61 to allow these bastards to continue. 27 Democrats voted to continue this corporate stranglehold. By allowing the megabanks, Zach Carter writes, to remain supersized, Congress has insulated them from the fallout associated with the Fed disclosures and given them a tool to fight other reforms. Not only are these banks now too big to fail, they are too big to regulate. It's just astonishing. And then Carter provides, or the Campaign for America's Future provides, the people who voted against regulating the banks. John Kerry, Lautenberg, Claire McCaskill of Missouri, Menendez of New Jersey, Nelson of Florida, Nelson of Nebraska, Harry Reid, or no, that's not Harry Reid, never mind. Schumer, I'm just giving you the Democrats, some of the Democrats. Who else? Baucus, Bai of Indiana. Conrad of North Dakota. Christopher Dodd of Connecticut. Feinstein of California. Gillibrand of New York. Inouye of Hawaii. Those are just some of the Democrats. If you want the whole list, go to the Campaign for America's Future. So as far as preventing this continuous onslaught against the American consumer, here's proof that it's going to continue. I'll be damned. Have we got any Red Hot Chili Peppers that have a lot of the F-bomb in it? We do? Okay, let's play some of that during the break. Oh, my God. 27 Democrats said, nah, we don't want no stinking reform. Oh, well. So I guess we'll just sit here on the radio program. We have the situation in... oh, by the way, the Iceland volcano is starting up again. Did you see that, Kathy? Yeah, it's starting to spew more clouds of toxins into the air. You better get saved, girl. You better go get your nails done and get ready to rapture. You better go get your hair done. Amen. We'll be right back.
talk radio right from the left. It's More Mike Malloy.
Ba-da. 21 past the hour. Susan in sunny Squim, Washington writes, Mike, I'm so sick of the Democrats in Congress complaining that the reason we are totally screwed is the fault of the lobbyists for the banks and big business. They are the ones taking the money, and they are the ones elected by the people. Just because someone offers them a bribe, and just because it's legal, does that mean they have to take it? Yes, the corporatists are self-serving scumbastards, but the damned elected officials are taking the money. Remember when you were a kid and your mom yelled at you for doing something and you said, but mom, Johnny, all of them were doing it. And she said, if Johnny jumps off the bridge, will you? It's like that, Mike. Our representatives have to stop following Johnny. I am so sick of all the bastards on both sides of this. Yeah, I know. I know. All right. To cheer you up, here's a missive from our economics correspondent, Prairie 2, who writes, the subject line is, they gazed down on the village nervously. You know, up in the castle. Japan held its stock market to only a 3% drop Friday by openly dumping 2 trillion yen into the market. That's about $21 billion. European markets didn't do as well and were down as much as 4%. The Dow dropped 300 points early, but clawed back up to only 140-point loss today. The facts, such as they are, from yesterday's panic are getting stranger as the data are analyzed. It seems 6 stocks plunged from respectable prices to pennies, and at least one rose 100 times its normal price. Regulators can and will void anomalous trades. They said immediately that there's nothing wrong with the system, but hacking must come to mind. The SEC is on Thursday's market plunge like a hen on a June bug, suspecting that somebody made a killing by driving down Procter & Gamble stock. Perhaps Wall Street wasn't aware that the SEC is now run by Democrats, not Republicans who will look at the porn sites. So there is now bandwidth available to track illegal trades and crack down on market manipulation. Wall Street was probably calmed somewhat today by the positive job numbers, even though they prefer higher unemployment. They are starting to wonder if the villagers will come with torches instead of bailouts. They've had several of their banks burned in Greece. Republicans are now seeing their "Where are the jobs?" chant go the way of "Drill, baby, drill." And those death panels have yet to materialize. Obama's successful diplomacy with the Chinese has slowed the exodus of U.S. jobs, with China freezing the expansion of factories aimed at exporting to the U.S., and they promised currency reform. Wall Street is floating the rumor that China will renege on that policy with the Greek debt crisis looming, but there's no indication from the Chinese that they will. It wouldn't seem likely to serve China's interest to change course after all the considerable effort they have applied to shift the dragon to domestic growth. That would be a good thing. The 290,000 new jobs announced today sound good, but that only covers 2 months of population increase. It will take 12 years at that rate to replace the jobs lost in the last 2 years. Since there are plans to lay off 300,000 teachers by the end of May, we aren't gaining very much. Big business doesn't plan to bring back jobs, and small business is being squeezed out by big business through imports, outsourcing, and wage suppression. Reform will only come when the villagers are mad enough to pay attention to the castle up on the hill. Prairie2.com. Yeah. I don't know, man. I spend most of my days now just trying to figure out what the hell is going on. And I'm not very good at that. And coming up after this break, we at the Huffington Post, Dan Frumkin, who writes there quite a bit, of course, points out that this Gulf oil spill, or it's not a spill, this eruption is a symbol of what fossil fuels do to the Earth every day, according to environmentalists. You know, it's just that we get to see it all at once when it floods into the Golfo de Mexico. And also, right after the break, coming back from the break, podcast trivia. Huh? Yeah, let's do it right now. When we come back from the break, I have in my hands, ladies and gentlemen, the list of questions. Nobody's ready. What are you talking about? Yes, we do. You watch what happens when you open the phones. Kathy says, we don't have enough listeners now. Let's do it next time. No, let's do it right away. I have in my hands, ladies and gentlemen, right here, the list of trivia questions. If you can get one right, you will win a one-year subscription to Malloy commercial-free podcast downloads. So get online now, 877-996-2556. We'll be right back.
C-SPAN, so you don't have to. It's More Mike Malloy.
Yeah, it is. 21 past the hour. This Jan in New York City sent this to me, and it just cracks me up. As you know, the chief suspect in this case of the failed Times Square car bombing is Pakistani-American Fazil Shahzad, who's confessed and everything. And much of the media has latched on to Shahzad's Muslim faith and his Pakistan identity, making, you know, inflammatory remarks and suggestions about Muslims and Pakistanis. CNN contributor and red state maniac Eric Erickson complained that the words Muslim and Islam are, quote, not mentioned enough in stories about Shahzad. He wrote, quote, it really is pathetic that you're more likely to see the words racist and Republican together in the newspaper these days than terrorism and Islam. And hate radio broadcaster Neil Bortz tweeted, OMG, the Times Square bomber is a Muslim. Shocker. Who would have believed it? And the cover of the Washington Post published Express features a black and white photo of Shahzad with the sensationalist headline, Made in Pakistan. Yet, one fact being ignored in the American media's sensationalist narrative about the failed bombing, thanks to Think Progress, is that the man who was responsible for police finding the bomb was a Muslim. The UK's Times Online reports that Alio Niasi, a Senegalese Muslim immigrant who works as a photograph vendor on Times Square, was the first to bring the smoking car to the police's attention. Here's the way the UK's Times Online reports it. Quote, Alio Niasi, a street vendor selling framed photographs of New York, said that he was the first to spot the car containing the bomb, which pulled up right in front of his cart on the corner of 45th and Broadway next to the Marriott Hotel. He said, quote, I didn't see the car pull up or notice the driver because I was busy with customers. But when I looked up, I saw that smoke appeared to be coming from the car. That would have been around 6:30 p.m. I thought I should call 911, but my English is not very good, and I had no credit left on my phone. So I walked over to Lance, who has the T-shirt stall next to mine, and told him. He said, we shouldn't call 911. Immediately, he alerted a police officer nearby, said Mr. Niasi, who was originally from Senegal and who has been a vendor in Times Square for about 8 years. End quote, the UK's Times Online. And as Think Progress goes on, as the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights notes, quote, South Asian and Muslim communities may yield useful information to those fighting terrorism. Arabs and Arab Americans also offer the government an important source of Arabic speakers and translators. The singling out of Arab, South Asians, Muslims, and Sikhs for investigation, regardless of whether any credible evidence links them to terrorism, will simply alienate these individuals and ultimately compromises the anti-terrorism effort. Reflecting on Niasse's Good Samaritanism, Muslim American author Sambul Ali Karamali writes, quote, it's somewhat consoling to know that the man who first noticed the smoking Nissan Pathfinder and sought help is also Muslim, a Senegalese immigrant. I grew up Muslim in this country with Muslim friends and non-Muslim friends, and there was very little difference between the two groups. We were all American. End quote. But, you know, a piece of garbage like Eric Erickson or a degenerate psychopath like Neil Bortz, they don't care. You know, why make the distinction? Bortz is another one of these right-wing millionaires who made his fortune the same way so many of these right-wing media millionaires do, and that is by stomping on the bodies of poor people and black people and the homeless people and handicapped people and unemployed people. You know, Bortz's lessers. People not as good as Bortz, because Bortz, you know, pulled himself up by his own bootstraps. Yeah, right. Slimy bastards, all of them. A Muslim, huh? Makatsi Newspapers has a little breaking story here. There's no credible evidence that terrorists trained Shahzad. That's according to... one U.S. official told McClatchy, quote, there's nothing that confirms that any groups have been found involved in this for certain. It's a lot of speculation at this point. End quote. Shahzad may have, at the most, had incidental contact, quote, quote, with a terrorist organization, and he may have been encouraged to act, so one of the officials who declined to elaborate further. Four U.S. intelligence and counterterrorism officials and two other U.S. officials with knowledge of the case spoke on the condition of anonymity, yada, yada, yada. If you believe what has been leaking out of the interrogation of this man, you come to realize that apparently he just flipped out. He just had enough of seeing Pakistanis and Afghans blown into red mist by predator drones and an American military invading his country and killing his people for no reason, none whatsoever. And did what you would do, good patriotic American. He decided to get some revenge.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. I haven't seen in the past... 6 or 7 hours, any updates on the situation in the Golfo de Mexico regarding British Petroleum's attempt to salvage and protect its investment by putting some sort of a dome, a square dome, over this erupting gusher that they created in the floor of the ocean. So I don't know if they've succeeded or not. I certainly hope they do, not so they can continue to suck oil out of the earth and make billions once again, but so that the damage already perpetrated against the natural world by these predatory sons of bitches can stop creating further destruction. But the there was a closed-door session briefing for members of Congress 2 days ago, wherein a senior BP executive conceded that the ruptured oil well in the Gulf of Mexico could conceivably spill as much as 60,000 barrels a day, more than 10 times the current flow. 60,000 barrels a day. And as reported by the New York Times, the scope of the problem has grown drastically, drastically since the oil rig exploded. Now the discussion with BP on Capitol Hill is certain to intensify pressure on the company, which is facing a crisis similar to what the Toyota Motor Company had with uncontrolled acceleration. No, New York Times, it is not. This is not about this demon BP. It is not like the acceleration problem of the Toyota. This is an unstoppable, to this point, unstoppable destruction of the whole planet. It's a little bit different, you morons, from what happened to Toyota. And then the Times puts it this way. Amid growing uncertainty about the extent of the leak and when it might be stanched, pressure on BP intensified. Had to sneeze. Pressure on BP intensified on multiple fronts Tuesday, from increasingly frustrated residents of the Gulf Coast to federal, state, and local officials demanding more from the company. This is the part I like. The company considered a broad advertising campaign. They considered an advertising campaign. What were they going to do? Notify America that we here at BP truly do believe in Beyond Petroleum. There was this thing that happened down in the Gulf, and we certainly will stanch the flow of oil. Just a minor event thing. Look over here. Don't look down there. Quit looking at those goddamn photographs from NOAA. Please quit looking. Quit going to the internet. Here, look at our slick ad campaign. Look, we have a double truck ad. That means two pages. In the New York Times, in its full color. The company considered a broad advertising campaign, but top BP executives rejected the idea before planning even started. A BP spokesman said, quote, "In our view, the big glossy expressions of regret don't have a lot of credibility," end quote. Instead, the company has dispatched executives to hold town meetings in the affected region. And it has turned to lower-profile social media outlets to trumpet its cleanup efforts and moves to organize volunteers. It's always volunteers when it comes time to clean up capitalism's destruction. Ever notice that? As long as the capitalist monster is sucking resources or sucking labor or eating the planet, and nobody's paying attention. Who gets rewarded? The executives, the shareholders. But once there is a disaster, and there is always a disaster, we need some volunteers. We're going to send our executives right down there to the Mississippi Gulf Coast, down there to the Gulf of Mexico. That's where we're going to go. And we are going to trumpet our cleanup efforts. Look here. Look at my case. Look at this. Isn't this a nice trumpet? Look at this. Or something like that. I'm trumpeting our cleanup efforts. Why, do you realize? What have you cleaned up so far? What have you done to stop the destruction, the death of the Gulf of... Oh, we threw some stuff on the surface of we threw some stuff out there, a chemical dispersant, 100,000 gallons we did to try to break up some of the billions of gallons of petrol that we've released. But guess what? Chemically dispersing oil spills solves the political problem of visible oil, but not the environmental problem. Joseph Rahm, writing at Salon.com. I spoke to Karis Mitchell-Moore, a professor at University of Maryland's Chesapeake Biological Laboratory and one of the writers of the toxicity chapter for the National Academy of Science report. She explained that dispersants are, quote, a molecule that looks like a snake. The head part likes water and the tail part likes oil. The dispersant pulls the oil into the water in the form of tiny droplets. And that means subsurface creatures from oysters to coral to larval eggs that might never have had significant exposure to the oil are now going to get a double whammy, getting hit by the oil and by the dispersants. Worse, the oil droplets are now in the form that looks like food to filter feeders like oysters, which otherwise may only have been exposed to the far lower levels of dissolved oil components found under a typical oil slick. The droplets of this mess can also clog up the gills of fish. Mitchell-Moore noted that, quote, oil contains a whole suite of toxic chemicals, including known carcinogens. The dispersants can lead to far greater accumulation in living organisms of polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, oil-derived toxic compounds that were found in mussels 19 months after one spill in which dispersants were used. After the 1989 Exxon Valdez spill, a study found these chemicals had an impact on the developing hearts of both Pacific heron and pink salmon embryos. So all of a sudden, you remember the other day, Shell, or I'm not Shell, but BP said, oops, okay, all right, never mind, we're not going to send any, we're not going to spray any more of this out there. Whoops, look over here. We're not going to do that anymore. Well, BP continues to acknowledge its responsibility to shut off and clean up the oil. It is being barraged by government officials and civil lawyers who are redoubling efforts to ensure that the company's legal obligations are clearly defined and strictly enforced. Two words for you guys. Well, actually, one new word, ExxonMobil. What did they do in Prudhoe Bay? Up bar in Alaska. Huh? How much of that was settled? What about the civil penalties, the criminal penalties? Were there criminal penalties? What about all that? It is 21 years later. Does anyone who wrote this article for the New York Times think for one second that that case has been settled? That ExxonMobil, with its billions upon billions upon billions upon billions of quarterly profits, did the right thing? Please. This is capitalism. This is collateral damage. Collateral damage. If we are drilling for oil and there is a thing, an event that happens that destroys the planet, well, that's collateral damage. Of course, that's not going to happen. It might destroy the Gulf of Mexico, but for Christ's sake, the whole planet? Oh, get real. And besides, we have to pay $75 million, so what's everybody bitching and complaining about? One of the BP executives, one of the company's top crisis managers, gave a briefing on Tuesday for reporters from Gulf Coast newspapers and the Associated Press, in which he said he wanted to win the hearts and minds of the people. I want to win the hearts and minds of the poor, miserable, collateral damage freak bastards that live in the area that we've decided to murder.
Maybe some suggestions, and I bet they're gonna ask me about man's insanity. You got a real nice planet here, but you better watch your atmosphere. And you better clean your waters up, or have none for your cup.
Hey, truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. What is interesting to me is the fact that there is a cap of $75 million, a federally mandated, a congressionally mandated cap of $75 million in the amount paid in economic damage when something like this happens. Drilling accidents. You got to wonder, don't you? Who do you suppose made sure that cap was put in place? $75 million. Do you know what that is in terms of profit for a company like ExxonMobil? What is that in a good quarter? Is that 2 hours worth of net profit? Three? Okay. Is it a day's worth of net profit? These rancid capitalist bastards have committed an act against the entire planet that can only be described as, I don't know how to describe it, an act of terror that's indescribable. It defies description. And the consequence for this is what, a $75 million cap on what they have to do?
Oh, well, we're going to take care of everything. We are really responsible. We are going to send our top executives down there and let people know, hey, we're going to buy a new shrimp boat. Yes, we are.
Bastards. Bill Nelson, Senator, Democrat of Florida. Frank Lautenberg and Robert Menendez, two Democratic senators from New Jersey, have introduced legislation to raise that cap to $10 billion. $10 billion, and to make sure that the new limit applies to this spill.
Oh, won't the lawyers have fun with that one? No, you can't do retroactive penalties. Well, it's not a penalty. It's just a cap on the cleanup. Oh, no, it's a penalty. And you see where this is going to go. Into court. For freaking ever.
And $10 billion, are you kidding me? Who comes up with these numbers? What's the value of a shrimp? What's the value of algae? What's the value of a manatee or a pod of porpoises? What's the value? What's the value of a seabird? What's the value of somebody who makes their living from the sea along the coast of the Gulf? Well, who does this? Who decides how much this stuff is worth? Who sits down and says, okay, well, let's see what we have here. We have 37 septillion plankton involved. And, let's see, we'll ascribe to each plankton a net worth of, let me think, point a thousand zeros 1 cents. American dollars, of course, to each plankton. So, I mean, how do they do it? How do they do it? How do they assign value when they step into something like the Gulf of Mexico and destroy the food chain? destroy the laboratory that provides oxygen for the planet. How do they do that? How do these companies that go into Brazil and destroy the rainforest, or Indonesia and destroy the, how do they set a value? How do they decide how much you're going to pay for the hardwoods or the destruction of, well, there's all kinds of animals in the Amazon, even some that look like human. They are. Yeah, they run around. They're naked. Can you believe that? Damn. And they live in little villages. And when they've hunted out the area, they move on and build another village. Isn't that quaint? But we need the land to raise beef cattle. So I'm sorry, the little forest people are going to have to move on. And the fish and the Gulf, and it's all going to have to move on, isn't it? And somebody has the balls to call me and tell me there's nothing wrong with capitalism? Are you serious? Are you serious? BP has significantly stepped up its lobbying on Capitol Hill, spending nearly $16 million in 2009, more than triple what it spent just 2 years ago, according to data compiled by the Center for Responsive Politics, a watchdog group. Well, how much more do we have to give you? Senators, members of Congress, if you'll form a line over here to the right. Yeah, right over here to my right. I'd like you to introduce you to two of our leading executives. They're the ones that have the keys to the vault. Now, how much do you people want? Please remember, we're a struggling oil company. We're only the third biggest in the history of the human race. And how much do you want? Don't get all pissy now. How much do you want? This is just collateral damage. I mean, you guys do this all the time over in, where are you now? That's right, Iraq and Afghanistan, Pakistan. You know, you're blowing people away. These are just damn fish. These are just plankton. These are just single-cell organisms. Why are you getting your bloomers in a wad? Ever feel like you would just, you'd like to get one of these suits in a room someplace and have a chat? I'm serious. I'm not talking violence here, but just to say to them, you know, you filthy bastard, how dare you? How dare you do this? And you know what the executive would answer? He'd say, well, Mr. Malloy, how dare you continue to drive a pickup truck? And just because you live in Georgia, insist on having air conditioning. How dare me? How dare you? This is the Malloy Program. We're going to open the lines in case you want to call in. The number is 877-996-2556. couple of emails here about the containment cap. Justina Maryland writes, Mike, regarding why there isn't any news on the containment of BP's oil volcano. I think Rachel Maddow said on her show tonight that the siphon that will be used to transfer oil from the cap placed over the primary underwater source of the oil probably won't be ready until the weekend. And, of course, this type of system has never been used at the depths of the latest spill, so no one really knows what the outcome might be. And then Greg in Florida writes, Mike, from the early reports I'm getting, the fumes and natural gas are so intense at the site that they are overwhelming workers working on the cap. There are fears of another explosion. The captain of the ship deploying the cap, Demi Schaefer, claims all it would take is one metal-on-metal scrape to set off the fumes. I'm trying to keep up with what's coming in, but currently the information is sketchy and contradictory. I don't know who is taking this so-called cap out, whether they are BP employees or probably not. They're probably contractors. But you certainly have to admire their courage. I mean, I certainly have to admire their courage. They are standing on the lip of hell while they're doing this. And as Greg just pointed out, slightest spark. Pew! Well, anyway. Well, it's very hard to focus on which it's very hard to focus on which catastrophe to focus on. Which catastrophe to focus on, or something like that. It's really getting out of hand here, isn't it? Huh? You getting scared? Okay, not scared, but are you getting deeply, deeply, deeply concerned? I damn sure am. I mean, from this ricocheting global economic whiplash that we're all experiencing, well, not all of us. The Wall Street bankers are just making tons of money. That's what capitalism feeds on. You know, the term, they got very popular several months ago, or, all right, a little more than several months ago, a couple of years ago, is the term disaster capitalism. And it's almost like unnecessary repetition. Capitalism is a disaster. It is. I defy you. Well, never mind. I'm not going to issue any challenges. And I get these half-wits who call in here and, you know, try to make sense out of something they don't have a clue about. But disaster capitalism feeds and it creates disasters and then feeds on those disasters. What is the greatest gift to the capitalistic system? Time's up. War, because it destroys everything. Which means everything has to be rebuilt. Not just the infrastructure of the nations that are leveled, but also all the weaponry and the munitions that are used up. Because otherwise, I mean, when you make munitions, when you make bombs and bullets and planes and tanks and flamethrowers and death and destruction, if you don't use them, it's not like cans of peas that you put out in a supermarket and people come and buy them. Oh, I need more cans of peas. Everything capitalism touches, it eventually destroys everything, including the planet. We get that, don't we? I mean, we do get that. And, well, not 70% of us. 70% of us continue to live in some geeky, freaky world where Obama is from Kenya, and there is no such thing. It's just a liberal plot to destroy capitalism. You crazy bastards. You crazy, pitiful bastards. Oh, my God. As you choke to death eventually, and you watch your children choke to death on air that's no longer breathable because of what the capitalist system has done, are you still going to say,
Obama's from Kenya.
Pitiful bastards. You really are, you right-wingers, you Republicans. Just pitiful. You teabaggers. Good God. But it's just, it's a disaster. Every time, I try not to now turn on CNN. I know. Until, after a morning exercise, after making the beds, after feeding the dog, after glancing at the editorial page of New York Times, after, either taking Molly to school or saying goodbye when Kathy takes her to school or whatever. I try to stall it, and then give me the clicker. And I turn it on, CNN. All right, where? What? Show me. What? What disaster? What disaster is going on today? What's melting down today? What is the next direct threat to my life? And unlike the Bush years, this stuff is real now. John Ashcroft and all these freaks that worked for Bush, they would make stuff up.
Oh, well, we're raising everything to purple.
Oh, yeah, why?
Because, don't ask, this classified is up to purple. Get your plastic sheeting and your rubber bands and your glue sticks. And don't forget canned tuna. Oh, and don't forget duct tape.
That was almost comedic. It was comedic. It was almost funny. It was one could sit back, if you're an American back then, after the shock and horror of what happened on September 11, 2001, when all of a sudden we were stomped right in the face. We got stomped for a change. Jesus, God, it was horrible. 3,000 people dead. Because of the incompetent leadership that we had on the moment of the attack and for years leading up to the attack. But after that, just like the Project for New American Century said on their website before the attack, we've got to have another Pearl Harbor in the United States to advance our agenda. That's what we need. We need another Pearl Harbor. And there's still people out there who send me emails and say, well, how can you suggest that the Bush administration had anything to do with this? Are you insane? And a lot of that comes from people on the left. No, I'm not insane. I may be crazy, but I'm not insane. So after September 11, 2001, remember everything? Every time you turned around, you go in the bathroom to take a pee and you come out and they just elevated the color-coded terror bar. Where are we now? Purple. Mauve. Oh, my God. Where it explode. What happened? Nothing. What do you mean? Well, they caught a couple of guys down Liberty City, one of the Miami in-town neighborhoods. Yeah, what were they doing? Nothing. They were talking about blowing up the Sears Tower. Talking! But now, it's all freaking real. BP has decided that Armageddon is not going to occur in the Middle East. It's going to occur in the Gulf of Mexico. It is occurring in the Gulf of Mexico. What does BP really stand for? Beyond Petroleum? No. British Petroleum? No. Does it stand for Beelzebub Promises?
Listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's coming through a hole.
22 past the hour. Some phone calls. Chuck is in Knoxville listening on Sirius. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, Mike. How you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm all right.
I wanted to talk about the habitat that's involved that we're talking about. When I was a kid, we used to ride down to Panama City. We had a beach house on the beach just west of Panama City where it was quiet and private.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember, you know those paintings you see in the stores that are cheap? You know, you can pick them up for $40 in a frame. And they've got the white sand and the sea oats and the sun is shining through the clouds and it's shining through the water and you can see that particular green and everything.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
Oh, I know. I've been going down there for 25 years.
These are some of the finest beaches in the world.
With no comparison.
When you walk on the sand is pure white. It's like sugar sand.
And it crunches.
It squeaks like baby powder.
I know what you mean, pal.
When we dug our well, it was 300 feet down. It was more than 300 feet. We hit a petrified forest at 300 feet.
Oh, my God.
This is how old these beaches are and how long it took to generate that fine of powder from seashell.
Mm-hmm.
Millions, hundreds of millions of years in the making. The Everglades is thousands of square miles of mangrove swamps and sawgrass teeming with little tiny bugs and fish to the tune of trillions.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is what's at jeopardy here, and that's assuming that it doesn't get out into the Gulf Stream and get around the peninsula of Florida and on into the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing to me that given all of that, all that, if you will, God gave us, that these people could sit there and say, when they're putting these things together, there's 4,000 of them in the Gulf, to this day, nobody knows except the corporations themselves how successful these switches are. They say to themselves, well, we're not going to put a percussion switch on there because that's $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about how many hundreds of millions of dollars that particular oil well has brought in over the years. But that little fraction of a cost is much more important than all of that.
Yeah, and Chuck, thanks. We're coming up on a break here. I appreciate what you had to say. It's very, very poignant. And very real, too. But this is what capitalism does. Why bother with a $500,000 switch? It's $500,000 because it's a crapshoot. That's the way they look at it. If the lives of thousands of people, the livelihood of thousands of people is at stake, you know, the fisher people, if the environment, literally the environment in which they're working, if that's at stake, you roll the dice. That's what capitalism says. And if the dice come up snake eyes, in the past, all you did was take a look around, kind of cluck your tongue and move on to someplace else to roll the dice. And you just keep doing that. You see, that's what capitalism does. Capitalism must have ever expanding access to the natural elements that you find around the planet. They've got to have it. Natural resources, that's what we want first. And we don't care, the capitalists say, how we get it. And if people die and jobs end and nations sink beneath the sea and environments are destroyed and the marshes turn into sand, we don't care. Because that's not what we're about. We leave that to the socialists. We are capitalists. We have one thing that matters on the bottom line. Capital. Somebody's capital. Money. Whether it's dollars or Deutsche Marks or francs or yen. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. So, yeah, I hear what you're saying. But Collateral damage in this case might be, well, nobody knows yet what it's going to be. But it's going to be something. And it's going to be something irreplaceable and irreversible. A moment ago, I read you something from Greg in Florida about the fumes and natural gas so intense at the site where they're trying to put this cap on that they're afraid of an explosion. Now I get this from Greg in Florida. Tony in Maine writes, Mike, just heard on an AP report about the containment dome in the Gulf. The report says the plant is being stalled because the noxious fumes are so intense they fear another explosion, which could mean sending a four-story concrete metal container slamming down onto the pipeline. And one factor that no one seems to want to discuss is the upcoming hurricane season. We're only 3 weeks away from what the National NOAA is calling an above-average hurricane season. Now, what will happen when one of those storms comes in contact with this ever-growing slick? Not only will we see storm surges pushing this oil and the toxins ashore, but there's probably a possibility these storms could pick up this toxic mess and dump it inland, contaminating freshwater supplies. And the politicians think $10 billion is going to cover this? You got to be kidding me. And what's up with the New York Times printing up these stories in defense of BP? Reminds me of the period of time leading up to the Iraq War, where they were complicit in hiding the truth about weapons of mass destruction. Tony in Maine. And Judith in Asheville, North Carolina writes, it seems to me that once again, safety and protection of our country was an option, or was an oops. How many disasters are we to understand and forgive? There are a large number of oil rigs in the Gulf area. The Natural Resource Council has been screaming about it for years. They're in danger from weather, fire, terrorism. Yet Obama's Homeland Security czar and agency head had no plan. The oil companies don't care about our shores or our lives. They lied to Congress and the people about being safe. Jail them. Is it too expensive to protect our company or our country? But we need to be present all over the world with our military. Who are these idiots? Not Obama, not BP, then who is to blame? Obama fails to consider us and should be impeached. He's to blame for ignoring our safety. Too busy with his wars and banksters. Capitalism is one thing. Abuse of the land and sea for profit is another. BP should be denied access to our oil and land. They're liars and greedy. Judith. Well, Judith, I agree, except when you say capitalism one thing, abuse of the land and sea for profit is another, you're defining capitalism. So it's not one and the other. They're both the same. Exactly the same. Exactly the same. But I get your email. And Mike writes in that BP stands for Betrays Planet. Freddie is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hello, Freddie.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm pretty good. You're only the second person I've ever really called into to talk to on a talk show. I'm 46. I'm living in San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
And I've been doing some research on the Internet. You know, going back to the beginning, you know, of America lying to its people. You know, like in 1916 when the Jews in Germany made a deal with the British to get the Americans in the First World War. And if they did it, that the British would give the Jews Palestine. I mean, I can't.
What? No, wait, Freddie. I don't. In the first place, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. You're looking at some kind of history, I guess, that I haven't read yet. That's A. B. The Jews in Germany. Ah, Jesus God. No, thanks, man. Thanks for nothing. Who do we have here? Joshua's in Fort Worth, listening online. Hey, Joshua.
Well, hi, Mike. I've been listening to you for a long time now, off and on.
Yeah.
This whole Gulf situation has got me scared to death.
Yeah, and, me too.
And hearing that letter that you read a few days ago, first of all, I want to get this off my chest. I did some Google research, mm-hmm. and I found out that there was somebody in that letter referenced to somebody who works on that coast-to-coast AM radio with Art Bell, that conspiracy theorist. So I think that maybe, look, let's think about what Carl Sagan had to say. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not just ready to believe that the world's going to die just yet. But also, I did another bit of research, and I found that scientists think that 50% of the world's oxygen comes from the oceans.
Mm-hmm.
Some scientists think it's a third, so I'm not sure if it's a majority, but maybe we don't really know. But Mike, consider this. I consider myself pretty much an atheist. I'm an ex-Jehovah's Witness, believe it or not.
Say that again.
I'm an ex-Jehovah's Witness.
Oh, really?
And I consider myself from time to time, I debate between agnostic and atheist. So anyway, I think you'd find me pretty interesting. But anyway, suppose that this leak were to go out of control and scientists estimated that in 100 years, the planet would die. What do you think the religious fundamentalists would do? Do you think they just go on and say, well, let's go ahead and rape the earth, like James Watt, the Secretary of the Interior for Reagan, used to say? Because the Lord's going to come and rapture us away? I mean, that's the kind of things that I'm thinking about here. You there? Hello?
Okay, Joshua couldn't hear me. What happened there? I think it was his phone. Regarding the piece that I read the other night, Paul Noel... I don't know the reference to Art Bell, Art Bell's program. Paul Noel is a software engineer. He's a contractor. He's not in the Army, but he's a software engineer for the U.S. Army at Redstone Arsenal in Alabama. According to his little bio here. And the thing that I read yesterday, or I don't know, I guess it was last week, I don't think that was being laid out as, you know, a prediction. What is going to happen? I think the point he was trying to make was the potential for an absolute disaster is at hand. It's not just him now. Come on, it's not just him. Granted, he may have been the first one to broach the subject of... This is not a spill or a gusher into the ocean that is going to be contained with any efficiency. We've never done this before, was his point. There is debate now as to whether or not BP was drilling 5, 10, 15,000 feet below what their permit said. I'm talking about below the floor of the ocean. Beyond what their permit said, in doing that, you are going into an area where the pressure, I don't know how it increases exponentially. I don't know. If you're, if you're 1,000 feet below the crust of the earth in this particular geological area, and then you go 10,000 feet, is it 10 times more pressure or 1,000 times more pressure? I have no idea. But if they were drilling, and who's to know, right? Who's to know? The only people who will know will be the people who are running the BP gauges who looked at the dials and said, well, our permit says 12,000, but we're down to 18,000. Keep going, boys. I mean, who knows? So, you know, I don't write this guy off. You know, my first experience with what he wrote was on the internet, the web. I understand about the web. The web is 90% horse crap. Okay. 80%. All right. 70% horse crap. So I don't know this guy from Adam's house cat, but when I read his piece and then read it on the air, he was talking about the potential, the possibility, the reality within the scenario that he was laying out. If it happens, we're doomed. If it doesn't happen, we're not doomed. It's that simple. I mean, you know, I put that stuff on the air so you can listen to it. I'm not trying to be Art Bell. I have no idea about, you know, fruitcakes and freaks and what do you call that thing? Long distance vision or something? Remote viewing. That's right. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about reality. We're talking about a hole punched in the floor of the ocean that is now spewing thousands upon thousands of barrels of oil into the ecology of the Gulf of Mexico. You don't need to be a guest on Art Bell's show to suggest that the possibility for mega death exists with that event. You just don't have to. I mean, come on. And again, there are more and more people in the scientific community. I don't know if they're geologists or if they are environmentalists or what they are. But you know, the consensus now, as this thing goes on and on and on, the consensus is this is a disaster of proportions that can't be calculated at this point. And within those uncalculable proportions, there also exists the possibility of something none of us want to think about. At least I don't. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. It's 10 before the hour. Mark in San Diego wants to know, where's the Drilla from Wasilla? Sarah's lipstick is all over this dipstick. The election in Florida and the appointment of Cheney Bush resulted in America being ruled by an oiligarchy. Is it fitting that the state will be surrounded by oil now? People need to remember how they felt when they watched Avatar and Mobilize. What do we do next? Mark in San Diego. Well, there's Mark in San Diego on the phone. Hey, Mark.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, you basically touched on all the witty things I wanted to say.
Well, you wrote them to me.
Well, I just remember when that election was going on, I remember thinking, wow, people don't realize what is coming down the pike. And, you know, we were prone to hyperbole and saying, wow, we're going to die, you know?
Yeah.
And you can go there, but it's just so amazing that it has worked its way back around, mm-hmm. you know? Because if Gore were in power, I can't foresee that they wouldn't have taken some sort of additional measures to protect the environment.
You'd think. I'm just agreeing with you. I do agree with you.
You know, it's incredibly frustrating. But one thing I want to say is that remember how I want everybody who's listening to remember how they felt when they watched Avatar. And I know you did, so just fess up. And, you know, okay, where do we put our energy, mm-hmm. you know? And don't just attack the messengers like the Cassandras, you know? I use Facebook kind of as a weapon, and people put nice stuff up there, but I'm trying to get people to think and make phone calls. And, you know, if we know where to focus, I think we can do something. If everybody's focusing on the same little atrocity du jour, I think that we can actually break through, you know, if they get 3 or 4 million phone calls, because there's people around the country, and hopefully they're buying podcasts from the Mike Malloy Show, you know.
Well, I wonder how many people are calling the people who are in charge, at least as a result of elections, stolen or not. You know, I wonder. We have no way of knowing. The White House gotten a million calls? Has, Senate Environmental Committee or whatever it's called gotten a million calls? Who knows, Mark?
I just try to make sure that everybody does something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that once people move over that little tiny tipping point and make a phone call and they get through to somebody at some office who listens to what they have to say, they begin to feel empowered and they get to have a tiny sense of what it's like to be an active citizen. I think we're just so numbed out. We're so purchased out. And here's some good Toledo news. Crystal Bowersox on American Idol, her dad was a beryllium worker at a beryllium plant there. And I got to know her when she was a little girl writing songs. And this is a great thing because she can be an artist who can change the world. She's a, you know, anyway,
I remember the gypsum mines outside Toledo. I don't remember the beryllium, though.
Well, you know, my dad was a steel worker at Interlake. And when I was a kid, I was 10 years old. I just remember going to my neighbor's house or friend's house, and there was this huge shake. You know, we thought explosion, you know, and it's like, which is cool, really. It's cool. We're thinking, is it the oil refineries, the steel mill? Or is it the shipbuilding company? They were all in place and I saw where the smoke was coming up and the flames, and it was the steel company right where my dad worked. My dad got sick and went home. I got there before the firemen did when I was 10 years old, and I saw 8 of his friends blown apart.
Oh, my God.
I stumbled onto that, and then they came and grabbed me. The firemen grabbed me and pulled me out.
Ugh.
And so when we start raising hell around the world and bombing cities, you know, we have to be aware of what it does to people's minds, you know. I mean,
sure.
I'm a well-adjusted person, but after 40 years, I still have nightmares about that event, you know.
I'll bet. I'll bet you do.
There you go.
All right, Mark, thanks.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Appreciate you checking in. Yeah, Toledo was, God only knows what happened to all of us who spent time in Toledo. I grew up there and lived there until I left permanently. But I remember at one point my mother lived right across the street from this huge Sun Oil refinery in East Toledo. Huge refinery. And every time I go to visit her, you know, I could smell whatever those chemicals were that was used to change crude oil into gasoline, and I always thought they smelled kind of good. Oh, what's that? Wow, it makes my eyes sting, but it's, I don't know, it smells kind of good. And my mother had a series of German Shepherds that kept dying because they lived in the backyard. I'm serious. She tried to take good care of them, but they just kept dying. And I think later, of course, my mother lived to be almost 90. So, I mean, say what you want about living across the street from an oil refinery. Of course, she didn't live that long. I think it was only about 6 years. In dog years, that's 42 years. And I think 3 dogs bit the dust there. But not not my mother, but what he was talking about, Toledo. Oh my God, you could find anything in Toledo that was being dug out of the ground or milled or converted or changed, or and the chemicals. Oh, the chemicals. See you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.